I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello and welcome back to the Dado Download Podcast. I know it's been a while, but we're back from hiatus with the college baseball season just a couple weeks away. Jack, I know you're excited.
I am very excited, Chuck, and I think I've been pestering you to do this for a couple weeks, and I know you've got the basketball podcast that didn't exist last year, so you're stretched thin, but I'm excited to talk baseball. 2 weeks until USC's baseball season starts, so I'm glad we're able to get this first episode out there.
Now, for any first-time listeners, the Dado Download Podcast is part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. The Dado Download is our USC baseball podcast. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, along with my co-host, Jack Smith. We break down the latest news and developments about the Trojans program. Last year, we started about halfway through the season, kind of carried it through. We had the big hiatus during the summer. Jack was off in San Luis Obispo calling games for a summer league team. I was off doing my own thing, of course, but you know, covering football, covering basketball. Now it's back to baseball time, and especially with the way the basketball season is going right now for the men, we want to start looking at baseball as well. Should be a fun season. This week, we're going to get you caught up with the busy offseason they had. We're just discussing some groundbreaking, and I say that in air quotes, groundbreaking news, and take a look forward at the upcoming season for the Trojans as they try to take it one step further than they did last year when they were unfortunately snubbed when the USC tournament was revealed on Selection Monday. We'll also have an interview with the man in charge of pushing the Trojans to new heights despite some unique challenges this season, as USC head coach Andy Stankiewicz is slated to join us. As always, please make sure you guys like, share, subscribe to the Peristyle Podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. You don't want to miss any of our new episodes talking all things USC, from football to recruiting to basketball, with our wide range of shows. Also, please leave us a review as we continue to try to grow the show. And if you can also submit questions, comments, concerns for future episodes by emailing podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you specify which show it is for in the email headline so we make sure it's directed in the right place. Jack, got to ask you, how was the summer in San Luis Obispo? First, did you have some great tri-tip up there?
I did. They served it in the stadium, and I wanted to make sure that I saved it in the stadium for the last day, but I had it across town, and you put me on two to the chocolate shake with the bacon bits inside. You overrated it a little bit, but it was still really good. But got to see some good college baseball, was around a couple of USC players. You know, we had Fisher Johnson and Jacob Galloway and Josh Blum, a lot of players from around the Pac-12 as well, from Washington and Arizona, some guys transferring to Cal and other areas like that. So it was good baseball, good to be out there for the summer, and good to get a chance to meet a couple of USC's players.
Now, Jack is going to be busy this season, not only with this podcast, but also calling a ton of games. Jack, what are your plans kind of right now as you're career progresses, as you get busy working at, I think you're gonna be working for USC this year a little bit.
Yeah, so I'll be working for the I guess, with the athletic department for the Pac-12, you know, the games that aren't on the Pac-12 network get live streamed online at Pac-12 Live. So you can go to watch the Pac-12 live stream. If you don't have Pac-12 network, you know, it doesn't really matter. You can go watch it for free online. So anyone that wants to watch USC baseball, have a chance to do some of those games on the live stream, still working with a student radio station, but you'll be able to hear me on some of the USC games this season. Playing away from home though, Shotgun.
We will get to that. Let's first start with 2023. Andy Stankiewicz comes in, his first season with the Trojans. Just a little refresher for you guys. Turn things around immediately. This team goes on a run early and kind of, you know, catches all of our eyes, you know, makes you peek up your eyebrow a little bit going, okay, this is not what I expected, especially when they took over so late in the offseason. You know, it was basically July 4th when Andy Stankiewicz was hired. That's late in the cycle for recruiting, especially in the transfer portal. So USC was kind of pulling a couple pieces here and there, not the top tier guys, not the Paul Skeens of the world that were going to LSU and the, you know, the couple of guys that they were able to get, Thatcher Hurd from UCLA. This was guys that were overlooked or hadn't done anything yet in their career, but they come to USC and those are the guys that really shine for USC. Ryan Jackson was a key part for him in the middle of the infield coming over from Nevada. You had Caden Aoki at the front of the rotation or on Saturdays last year. He'll be on the front of the rotation this year, was one of their best pitchers, if not their best pitcher all last season after basically not pitching at Notre Dame and transferring from there. His brother Connor comes over as well. He does some solid things for him before an injury kind of set him back a little bit. What stood out to you though about the 2023 season and the way that USC was kind of able to turn things around much quicker than we maybe anticipated?
Yeah, no, I think you put it perfectly, because the reason that we started the podcast in the middle of the season is because no one really had very high expectations for the team going into the year. You know, they were picked to finish, you know, second to last or last in the Pac-12. And then we turn it around midseason. You're like, well, this team just beat Stanford in a series, and then they beat Cal, and they got a pretty good record, and they're winning all their games at home. Maybe we need to start a podcast about USC baseball. And they continued it for the most part for the entire season, you know, 34-23-1, respectable record, especially given what the expectations were coming into the year. And I think that you put it perfectly. There's some unheralded guys or, you know, transfers coming in that you didn't expect much from, but they really bonded together as a team. And I think that's a testament to the coaching staff with Andy Stankiewicz and with Travis Jewett, the hitting coach, and Seth Etherton, the pitching coach, that they were able to get the most out of everyone that they had. It felt like they were playing as a team. They'd get the hit that they needed at the end of a game. They'd clutch up when there were runners on and the pitchers needed to get that final out in the inning. And it just felt like they came together as a team and they were able to do the little things, that college baseball approach that you love to watch, where, you know, you're going to bunt the guy over and you're going to steal, but you have to get that last hit. And USC did that a lot of times. They were able to take advantage of when the fans started to come out to home games, they would really win at home. They went 26-6 at Dado Field. So they did a lot of good things. Now there were things that they needed to work on. Tough road schedule for the team. Went 6-15-1. They got snubbed at the end of the season. Maybe it was because of that glaring spot on the resume. They lost a couple midweek games that you and I said can't lose those midweek games, really tanked the RPI. So there were things that didn't go right in the first season. But I think overall, it was a very promising season for year one of the Andy Stankiewicz era. And you have to feel pretty excited coming into this year because you've got a lot of guys coming back. And, you know, I know we're going to talk about the roster, but this is an exciting year again for USC.
Yeah, you give a ton of credit to the coaching staff and what they were able to do. As we said, pulling some guys that hadn't had a ton of success in their career. And then some guys that were on the roster already that hadn't had a ton of success. I look at Johnny Olmstead, a guy that had been fine his career. Nothing special at USC. He becomes a draft pick under this coaching staff. So one of the big things when Andy Stankiewicz was hired that really stood out to me was the assistant coach hires. Going out and getting Travis Jewett, former head coach at Tulane, had been the top assistant at Vanderbilt, won a national championship, been the top assistant at Arizona State and Washington State. A number of stops along the way, very highly regarded to be the hitting coach. And the, you know, his efforts really showed off. I thought they batted 285 as a team. And guys that, like we said, that hadn't really done much in their career suddenly were impact players for USC. And then on the opposite side, with the pitching, Seth Etherton, former USC All-American, comes back to USC. And, you know, he'd been a pro ball the entire time. So there's question marks there about how well is it going to work? How well is it going to translate when you can't work with guys all the time like you can in pro ball? And listening to the players that I've talked to and stuff just rave about him as a coach. And then when you get someone like Sergio Brown as your ops guy off the field, you know, a guy that's been an on-field assistant for 20, 25 years, I thought that was impressive. Andy Jenkins coming over, and it's now the third assistant. He, USC was able to take advantage of the rule in the offseason that you can hire a third assistant now. So he's now, rather than being a volunteer previously, he has a ton of Pac-12 experience as well, played at Oregon State. So, I thought the coaching staff really stood out. But I thought they were going to have their struggles throughout the season, just because I didn't think there was a ton of talent. And I thought they were a year away for sure. And so I was super impressed with what they were able to do. Now, there was some talent remaining. I thought Cole Gabrielson was a guy that could end up being drafted, and he was. He had 11 homers, drove in 48 runs to, tied for the lead. But I didn't expect Johnny Olmstead to be the guy that was tying him for both of those categories, for the team lead. And then Austin O'Vern, thought he was an athlete, but even the coaching staff didn't really know what to expect from him because he had played football the fall during his freshman year. He comes out in the spring, hadn't done a ton in the fall, that a little bit, but was a man on fire the entire spring and drew eyes from all over the country, led the nation in triples with 14, setting the USC mark, was only a couple away. And there was a little bit of time there leading towards in the second half of the season where like, maybe he can catch, if he gets a couple more in the gap or something, maybe he can catch the NCAA record, which I think was 18. But just a phenomenal season for him, batting .314. Like I said, 14 triples, 4 homers, 38 RBIs. All eyes are going to be on him at the top of the lineup for USC going forward. But a great breakout campaign for him. A couple other guys, to mention Bryce Martin Grzelcyk, another guy who came from over from UCLA, didn't get a chance to play at all there, was a regular everyday guy for them as well. And then I got to give special props to Blake Soderstrom. Came over for CSUN, a guy that I've seen basically pitched his entire career and just be fairly middling. He would have some success, but then would fall back. He was their most important pitcher last year, in my opinion. The fact that they could use him in different roles, he ends up throwing 68 innings, even though he only started 9 games, 72 strikeouts. They figured some things out with him to get a little bit more movement on the fastball, and he was outstanding. And, I think he's going to get a chance this spring with a minor league or with a pro team in spring training and whatnot. We'll see if he can, catch on somewhere. But a lot to take away from last year, but can they now build on it? And that'll be the big question going forward. So looking forward to this group, we want to talk about what they can do, what they can build forward, but we got to start somewhere else. We've got to start at Dado Field. Okay. Well, why are you starting at the stadium? Because the stadium is gone right now. There is no stadium for USC to play in because of the new facilities that the football program is getting. That led to, a widening of the practice field. There's not going to be 2 practice fields, big building that's going to be football only. Well, they decided, all right, if we're doing that, then we're moving Dado, and they're going to reorient Dado about 90 degrees. So, home plate's going to move basically down to where the left field line is. They're getting a brand new stadium. It should be impeccable when it's done, but it ain't going to be done anytime soon. So the baseball team is going to be without a home stadium this year. And that's obviously going to make things very much more difficult for them. There are some challenges. There are challenges last year. This is a whole different level because, as you mentioned, they just were not good on the road last year. So now they will play 0 true home games this season. When we find out that news and we had heard some tricklings about it, when it was finally announced, what was kind of your thoughts on the fact that USC will not have a home field advantage at all?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed it walking by today. There's a big crane there. They're breaking down stuff. But we knew that this was going to happen at some point because USC, a couple off seasons ago, had announced we're going to make new facilities, and it was set further in the future. But with the football facilities coming sooner, this is kind of just laid down at the feet of the baseball program, like, hey, sorry, we're building the football facility, so the baseball stadium's going now. And my initial reaction was, it's just terrible timing. You're coming off such a promising season. You really want to build on that. Like, it kind of sucks. You know, this happens after they are able to have such a great year in year one. But I also knew that, you know, the players and the coaching staff, they're going to spin this. They're not going to let this, you know, judging off of their first season where we said you have to give the coaching staff a lot of credit, you know, they're not going to let this just completely tank what they're going to do in year two. And got a chance to talk to some players about it. And they're like, yeah, you know, it's not ideal, but you can only control what you can control. So we're going to go to those 6 a.m. practices at El Camino College, and we're going to take the bus out there to, you know, where they're now going to be playing, Orange County and LMU. And we're just going to do our thing because that's what's in our control. The other reaction I had is what you mentioned earlier is so good at home, so good with the fan base that started to pay attention more and come to games at the end of the year behind them, especially when you look at that UCLA series. That it kind of sucks that the fans here around USC might not go to games, they might stop paying attention, and you're also going to lose a lot of that home field advantage that was so important last year with the 26-6 home record and struggling on the road. So I think this is going to be a big test for, can you improve the way you play away from home in year two? Because if you're looking at anything from year one, like that's the one thing you need to get better at, is being able to break from your routine and be able to play away from home, not just walk from your apartment to the field. You've got to go out to a new stadium. You know, they've got three different home stadiums for the year. You got to be able to make that improvement. Now, they need to do anyway. This gives them, I think, a little bit more incentive because they've got no home games. But that was, I think, my initial reaction is this really makes it more important how they respond to, you know, how poorly they played on the road last year and how well they played at home.
Yeah, they didn't play well on the road, and there was a stretch where they go to Washington, they had a ton of momentum and didn't play well, and then they lose. They got swept in that series in a couple games. They could have won, they gave away, and then they play Long Beach State, they play at Cal State Fullerton and lose both of those games, and that was kind of the stretch that did them in when it came to the final, you know, when it came to the final resume and everything, because you look back on it and you say, oh, that one little stretch, if they could change something there, then maybe something's different. The end of the season, they go to Arizona. Arizona ends up getting into the tournament. USC does not, and they lost that series there. And then the one I think about is Auburn series. They lose two close games, or a close game, one that kind of got away from a little bit late, and then they have a tie when they should have won that game and someone didn't step on home plate. So that, you know, those things, and those are things that happen when you're on the road. You know, you step on home plate when you're at home, but when you're in a dynamic environment like it Auburn is, now that's the one thing though. The West Coast doesn't have terrific environments in every stadium. So can you now go to Great Park in Irvine, which is where they're going to play the majority of their games, and then over to LMU at Page Stadium? That one's much more tricky, I think. But I think if you go to Great Park and when they play, I think they have one series that they're going to play at Cicerone Field at Antier Ballpark in UC Irvine. Great, great field, by the way. Can you make those your own home? And I think there's opportunities here, Jack. I think there's opportunities because you mentioned how, yeah, they're not going to have the fan support. You know, our fans going to get behind them. This is a great chance to build your fan base.
Mm-hmm.
All those Orange County USC fans that do not want to drive up on a Friday to see, no. You know, Fridays are when the best pitchers pitch, do not want to drive up on Friday traffic. Hey, here's your opportunity. Go see Caden Aoki pitch. You get to see him pitch against, you're going to see him against UCLA's number one guy and Oregon State's number one guy, whoever along the way, you're going to get to see them against future big leaguers. This is a great opportunity for them to reach out. And I would be trying to hit up all the high schools. I'd be trying to hit up all the, you know, the booster clubs or whatever there is that are USC, you know, fan clubs and whatnot, and say, hey, we want you guys to come out. We're set these tickets aside for you, this group, this section, because all the tickets are free too. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have to pay. Just come out and check out the Trojans. So now in that, and if you do get that crowd, maybe they end up getting a better crowd than we anticipate. But if you get that crowd, you now you got to perform for it, right? So that's an opportunity there, I think. And then I think the other opportunity is, do you take advantage of this as a team? Make those bus rides the part that these players remember 30 years from now. Hey, we played and we did this and we made it to a regional or a super, whatever. Those things will all be remembered, but make those bus rides be the things that they remember in 30 years. I feel like I'm almost 20 years away departed from playing, but those are the things you remember. You remember being with your buddies. Like, we had a 7-hour bus ride one time because we made it all the way to Florida when realized our bus driver realized he missed a turn somewhere. We made it to the Georgia Florida line, literally, and had to turn back because I think we were playing in Macon. And like those are the things you remember on the side of the road. You know what the you know what your teammates did, talking to the coaches and whatnot at a rest stop, all those type of things. Those are what you remember. So make those bus trips memorable.
So yeah, and you know, I think this is, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, but not every team gets an opportunity like this either to gel so much. You mentioned the Auburn series, and one thing I want to say is I feel like that's it could be very symbolic for what's happening this season. Do you remember where that Auburn series was supposed to be played?
At USC.
It was supposed to be played at USC, but weird Southern California rain moved the series to Auburn. And so you've got this USC team. They're so hyped. They're welcoming in an SEC Auburn team at home. No, the rain's happening. Now, all of a sudden, right before the series, we've got to head out there on the road. We make a dumb mistake or two. We lose two of the games and then we tie. You're hoping that doesn't happen for USC this season if you're the coaching staff. But I feel like that is very similar to what's happened here, where you're approaching the season. Oh, this is going to be so exciting. We're kind of on the map now. We're respected again. Oh, got to go play all of our games away from home. It's very similar.
That's a great point. I didn't even think about that, you know, off the top of my head. But yeah, that series is supposed to be at home, and instead it wasn't. You're playing in the SEC. Now, going to Great Park, going to LMU are not going to be the same environment.
A little easier, yeah.
But maybe USC fans will come out and make them so. Like, LMU is does not have much seating. So if, you know, if a number of USC fans come, and hey, I'm a USC fan, yeah, but I'm on the west side. I don't go across the 405. Not during the week, and those are all midweek games. So Tuesday, Wednesday, I can't make it to Dado. Well, here's your chance. Here's your chance. You're already on the west side. It's going to be at LMU. The only thing I will say, I'll give people forewarning, parking there is expensive. So you're going to have to pay for parking while you will be able to get into the game. So make sure you bring a couple bucks for that.
And I will say, I actually got to go to Great Park a couple of times this summer. A team in my league this summer played their games at Great Park. And it's this big, you know, sports complex that's for, you know, bigger travel ball tournaments. But it's really nice. It's got a full press box. It's got good seating. It's got restaurants built in. It is a very, very nice baseball park. So, you know, I'd almost say it's a nicer place to watch a baseball game than the current Dado Field. It's more modern and everything like that. So if you're in Orange County, don't just be thinking, oh, well, they're just playing at this place where, you know, kids go and play it. And this is a real, real complex, a real stadium. It is a good place to watch a baseball game. So I would offer that as a kind of an incentive or another reason to go watch the team play, is because it's not just some, you know, broke down stadium. This is a very nice, modern, recently built stadium that is a fun place to watch a baseball game at.
Now, you've been to that stadium. How does it play? Is it, you know, just a normal field? Is there anything unique about that stadium?
Yeah, no, it's pretty normal. I think it's meant to be a little bit vanilla when it comes to the dimensions and everything like that, because it's, you know, meant for not youth baseball, but those upper division travel ball tournaments. But it's got, you know, full seating behind home plate and down the lines. You've got spots to put, I believe, blankets out on the grass behind the fences. You know, I'm not sure if it have enough seating for it, but it really looks like a place that you could host a regional at. That's kind of what I would compare it to. Looks like a smaller version of what you'd see the complexes look like in Omaha or at the Little League World Series, like places like that, where it's just built for people to come watch games.
And I mentioned that because when you go to Page Stadium, when you go to LMU, the dimensions are different, because there is the blue monster, the Mikos monster out in left field, you know, very similar to the green monster at Fenway. It was built in the same vein. It is a short porch to left field with a giant wall. So how quickly can USC, how much practice can they get over there, one, to just get ready for it? Because they're going to play LMU as well, but all their other midweek games will be played there. So taking care of those midweek games can be valuable for your resume at the end of the season. Especially, you mentioned, they'll play Michigan. They'll play Cal State Fullerton, who I think has a great shot in the Big West this season. You know, they'll play teams, you know, Fresno State will have a chance in the Mountain West that will – be potential front runners in their own conferences. UC Irvine, you know, can they take care of business against some of those teams that could boost their resume, but they're going to be playing at a unique field? Can they make it their own home field advantage and get used to the unique dimensions of Page Stadium and whatnot, so that, you know, that they can make it their own and they play the ball a little bit better off the wall than the other team does. And, you know, that helps them, that extra out or whatever it may be that changes changes a game, because that's, you know, what college baseball so often comes down to. Now, looking at the schedule, they will start the season actually on the road. Of course, they'll be on the road. They'll start the season in Arizona. They'll be playing in the MLB Desert Invitational. They'll take on BYU, Grand Canyon, Ohio State. There's some other teams in this as well. There's, you know, it's in Arizona the first weekend. If you get an opportunity, I would suggest going out, because you can catch the USC games, but you can also catch another game in a different field. So you can catch Oregon State always opens the season in Arizona. So go out there and catch them out there. The preseason favorites in the Pac-12 gets a chance to see and compare and contrast. What does USC look like? Look at Travis Bazana, their second baseman. He's going to be a top 10 pick more than likely. Check out, you know, them. You can also go see Arizona State. They're playing. You know, Grand Canyon is going to be hosting some other games outside of this tournament as well. If you really want to, you can go down to Tucson and catch them playing against Northeastern. And Northeastern's a damn good team with some good players from the Boston area that, you know, that I've got a chance to check out last year coming up here. And you can check out their head coach is Mike Glavin, who is actually Tom Glavin's brother. So, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, baseball history as well there. But you go out to the desert and you catch multiple games. You see USC each day, and you can see some of their competition as well. I highly recommend it. I'm actually looking into whether or not I will be going out there. That's one of two tournaments that they'll be playing in early in the season. The other one, which, Jack, I think you're going to be heading out to, is going to be in Texas. And if you're going to be on the road, you might as well just get an airplane and go for it, right? They're going to go to Texas to play in the Kubota College Baseball Series at Globe Life Field, the home of the Texas Rangers, the World Series champion Texas Rangers. They'll be playing TCU and Texas A&M, two really good Big 12 and SEC programs that have been consistently good for the last, I don't know, decade or so, very much because of one man who has spanned the two programs, Jim Schlossnagel, who really built that TCU program up and then turned it over to Kirk Sarlous, former pitcher at Cal State Fullerton. Now he's the head coach at Texas A&M, and both those programs are going to be really good. So that's another chance for USC to kind of show, all right, where are you at nationally? Not just against the local teams in the Big West and the WCC, you know, your non-conference games, where are you at nationally? So that'll be fun to see what they're doing there. In between those two, that'll be the third weekend when they play that series. In between that, we'll get our first opportunity to see USC at Great Park. Their first non-conference, quote unquote, home series will be against Portland. And Portland was a pretty good team in the WCC last year. So you know, look at those first three weekends. What kind of stands out to you? I know, like you said, you're getting a chance to go out to Globe Life. What are you looking forward to the most going out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lot of good baseball. You know, they play TCU twice. They play Texas A&M once. They don't play Arizona State, but Arizona State will be there that weekend as well. I know your other employer, D1Baseball.com, says 8 of their top 100 MLB draft prospects will be playing for those four teams in the tournament. So there's going to be a rich amount of talent out there. And also, you know, you get to play a game if you're USC in a stadium that just held the World Series. Now, they got to play one game in Angel Stadium last year, but they kind of roped off a lot of areas and there was only a small portion for fans. This time you get to go to a brand new MLB stadium, one of the newest, I think the newest in Major League Baseball, that just, you know, held the World Series champions, and you're playing, you know, some schools that you will never play, no, not never play, but rarely play in front of scouts, in front of fans, and just a beautiful area to watch a baseball game and to play a baseball game. That'll be really fun. I also think, you know, you're going to Arizona as well to play in some spring training fields. If you're forced to be away from your home stadium all year, you should do as many of these things as possible, because I think it's easier to get psyched up for a tournament than maybe it is to play a midweek game at LMU. You know, you're going across the country to play some SEC teams and some Big 12 teams, as well as, you know, Ohio State and a Big 10 team they're going to play next year. Like, go there and do that instead of playing all their games at Great Park, all the games at LMU. They're taking advantage of, I guess, what we said earlier. You can phrase it as an opportunity that they have to play all their games away from home.
Yeah, and then they'll come back from that tournament, and, you know, that's the first weekend of March. Second week of March, Pac-12 play starts. So, you know, within a month, we'll find out, you know, what these Trojans are about, and they'll get a chance to get a little redemption maybe against Arizona, the team that got in over them in the, you know, in the on Selection Monday. Also got in over UC Irvine, who should have been in over either of those teams, but I digress. So that'll start Pac-12 play, and then obviously they go through the whole gauntlet, which the Pac-12 will be once again. And then eventually the season will end in Scottsdale, Arizona, at the Pac-12 tournament. always fun. It will also be the final one. It'll only be the third one, and it'll be the final one because the Pac-12 tournament, it will be no more when no Pac-12, and then USC will head off to the Big Ten, and we'll have a whole new list of topics to talk about next year. But let's look at the state of the program. You know, we talked about how we were super impressed with what they did last year. And maybe this year was the year we're expecting, all right, let's see some positive results and see where they're at. But, you know, the timeline has definitely been pushed forward. Do we push the timeline back now because of the stadium issues and the fact they're going to be on the road and it's going to create these new challenges? Or do you push it, you know, even more forward because of what they showed you last year? What is your anticipation? Try to get that word out. Anticipation for this season, and where do you kind of see where the program is at right now? Still looking for only their second NCAA tournament regional appearance since Mike Gillespie was very rudely pushed out of the program. RIP to the great Skip Gillespie.
I think you and I talked about it off air. Everything that I'm looking at for the program right now and for the team, comparing last year's team to this year's team and seeing the progress they made and people they've brought in and places where they were able to return a lot of talent. Basically everything is saying, wow, this team is going to be better than last year. Like this is, they have improved. Like this is a better roster, maybe an easier schedule depending on, you know, who you're playing and the home team, home games and the away games and everything like that. And then the news hit and it's like, how much does this way down all the other positives that were in my head and that I was thinking about going into the year? And I think it would be easy if they were 500 or just a little bit above 500 at home last year and a little bit above 500 on the road, or maybe a little below 500. That's not a big deal. Maybe other teams were not having this same conversation, but just because of how much they struggled on the road, it just makes you have to think, are they going to be able to handle this transition? Is it going to be harder on them than it would be on other programs, on other teams? And I think, you know, it is a disappointing timeline for USC. Like the fact that this is happening going into this year is not great. But at the same time, I would assume if we ask Andy Stankiewicz, and we'll get a chance in this episode, hey, does this slow down your timeline? Do you look at this season any different way? He's going to say, well, hell no. Why would we do that? Like, I guarantee you, if we asked him that, that's what he would say. So, you know, I think that you have to put a little bit of trust in the coaching staff to get the guys ready because they did so last year. But at the same time, there's so many positives that you hope it doesn't get weighed down by this one negative. But it is something that has crossed my mind.
And we should point out, you know, we mentioned how they were picked either last or dead last, you know, down the bottom third. At best in the Pac-12 standings before last season, they finished fourth. You know, mm-hmm. They finished with a 17-13 record. First time they'd finished with a winning record in the Pac-12 in several years, probably since 2015, maybe 2016. Off the top of my head, I can't remember. But 2015 was the only other time that they've been to a regional, like I said, since 2005, when they, you know, got rid of Skip Gillespie the next year. But they return a lot. Now, first, I want to get back to one thing you said. You talked about how this hits and it's like all the momentum they have, and it's kind of, you know, the air is sucked out a little bit with the momentum they have were building going into the season. That may be true. However, the momentum they've had on the recruiting trail, this does not hurt at all. And let me tell you why. Is because this news came so late in the recruiting cycle. Everyone that's coming this year was already signed. Everyone that's pretty much a senior, a lot of those guys are already made their commitment. Now, there may have been one or two people, I don't know. But all you tell them is, hey, you might miss your first year in the new stadium, your first year of college. You may not be in a new stadium. However, you're going to get to be the first one to mm-hmm. experience it. And so everyone they're recruiting now, everyone that's not committed, you know, a lot of the seniors going, the kids that are seniors this season that are going into their senior year, those kids are already committed. A lot of them are already signed during the early signing period. The kids that are juniors, a lot of those kids are committed too. But, you know, the kids that are going to be there that are 2 years away are the ones that haven't made commitments. And those are the ones you're going to be recruiting now. So now you got this huge recruiting pitch. Hey, you get to help open this brand new stadium.
You get to break it in.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, the timing as far as that help, you know, does not hurt recruiting at all. Maybe even help recruiting. Now it may hurt them a little bit as far as the transfer portal with grad transfers this upcoming year, but even so, you know, the guys that they went after this offseason, those guys were already you know, were already signed and were already taking classes by the time this news came out. So, you know, that's one area where maybe they have to, you know, evaluate, do we go after grad transfers? You know, are they telling us I want to play somewhere different next season versus, you know, maybe we go after guys that have a couple years eligibility, similar to Brock Blatter, a guy they brought in after his freshman year from Alabama, you know, a kid that could potentially be a frontline starter for him rather than just a grad transfer like Jared Fikus that they brought in. So, you know, maybe they adapt a little bit as far as the recruiting of the transfer portal. But as far as the high school kids, I think this works out pretty well for them.
Yeah, and I think that you mentioned the changing up the transfer portal strategy. That's probably their two biggest success stories from the portal last year were true freshmen the season before and transferred in for either their sophomore or their redshirt freshman years. And maybe Blake Soderson gets thrown on the list, but you're talking about Caden Aoki, who led the Pac-12 in ERA, and Bryce Martin-Grudzielanik, who hit over 300 and played a good amount of second base for you. Like, those are two of your biggest hits. And also, when you bring in players at that caliber, you've got them for one or two or sometimes three more years. So yeah, more than just having them for one season. Now, there are obviously a lot of good one-and-done transfers, but I think USC has shown that they can hit on both the grad transfers as well as the younger guys who are maybe cast-offs from their former schools.
Yeah, and let's look at what the roster holds. You know, we're going to break this down. We're going to try to get Seth Etherton and Travis Jewett the next couple of weeks and break this down a little bit more. So we're not going to really focus in on each individual players, but just in general, the Trojans return a lot. You know, they didn't lose a ton of players off last year's roster. You know, their starting rotation, they bring back their top two guys and Caden Aoki, Tyler Strasburg. They, you know, and Aoki, D1 baseball, we just had him as our preseason Pac-12 pitcher of the year. It's been a minute since USC's had the Pac-12 pitcher of the year. I'm going to have to actually look that one up to see the last time that happened. Like, it doesn't pop off the top of my head. And then on the offensive side, you return seven of your nine, you know, everyday starters, and, you know, Johnny Olmstead and Cole Gabrielson get drafted. Congratulations to them on that. But USC has more pieces that they can plug in. And you get back Austin O'Vern. This is going to be his last year at USC, almost barring an injury, because he will be draft eligible this year. So what can you do, you know, with the talent that you have? You know, this is the year where for them to make a big push forward, I think, just with how many players they have returning and how many guys already have had some success. So you're not really, really worried about the confidence piece of it. Whereas a lot of times, like last year, the guys hadn't had success. So then when they do, okay, you start trying to build on it. Now you get a chance to build on it. They return a ton, and then they added selectively, as we mentioned, a couple of the transfers already, and in the freshman class they have coming in. So the roster will be at 40-man. That's a rule this year for the NCAA. So they should have more options. And, you know, what kind of stands out to you about what is returning to this roster? What's the biggest thing that catches your eye?
Yeah, there's kind of two stats that I've picked out, at least prepping for some of the broadcasts that we have to do early in the season, that really stick out to me and that I enjoy. USC returns the starting pitcher that led the team in ERA, innings, and starts. And those are three different guys. You had Caden Aoki, who led the team in ERA, Tyler Strasburg, who led the team in innings, and actually Eric Hammond led the team in game started because he started as a Sunday guy and then pitched in the midweeks as well. And, you know, this offseason, at least so far, it seems like his velocity is back up after having Tommy John surgery last year. So, you know, maybe those three guys are the ones that you can immediately just slot in Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You've also, you know, we'll talk about it later. You've added some guys who could potentially pick up one of those roles as well. And then USC returns all four of its 300 hitters from a season ago. You had Ethan Hedges, Jacob Galloway, Bryce Martin-Grudzielanik, and of course, Austin O'Vern. All four of those guys are coming back. You return Ryan Jackson, who was a key piece up the middle. One of those glue guys, I think, that made it seem like this is a team that has good culture and that they're the ones that can do the little things right. Like, he's the perfect coach's player for that. And you're just returning such a strong piece of a young lineup that hit really well last year. And now you're just hoping, okay, which one of those guys can go from a 280 hitter to a 310 hitter? Who can go from hitting 300 to hitting 330? Who can go from hitting seven home runs to hitting 13? You're hoping that these young guys that already played well last year, two of them break out and they're not all American level, but they're all Pac-12 level like Austin O'Vern was last year, because USC only had two all Pac-12 players, I think. So you're just hoping that those guys can take the next step. But the fact that you return seven of your nine hitters from the lineup and three of your starters, it opens up room for breakout players because you have so many young guys coming back.
Yeah, the answer to that question is Carson Wells and Luca DiPaolo. Just going ahead and saying it right now, those are the two guys that I'm picking immediately to break out a little bit.
But and Luca DiPaolo is someone who he's one of those. He's not one of those seven. Like he is someone that will fill one of those other two spots, which is, you know, if that's your pick, that makes it even more exciting for USC.
Yeah, but they also brought in some notable newcomers. So I got to ask you, Jack, who are you most excited to see from this group of freshmen and transfers that they brought in?
I think Chris Brown is the name that you go to first in the lineup. Guy that's coming over from UConn, missed all of last year, but had a really strong end to his 2022 season, was an all Big East tournament team, the Notre Dame regional all tournament team. That was kind of the last that we saw of him, and he was hitting the cover off of the ball, you know, played healthily this summer in the West Coast League and was a third baseman before at UConn. He came in and the USC staff says, hey, you know, that's working, but let's try you here at first base. And that seems to be where he's going to stick. So I would assume that he's going to play first base. I've heard a lot of good things about the way that he played in the fall. But if you're asking me who I'm most excited to see, there's, I think, one answer. And we don't know how much we're going to see him, but it's got to be Deuce Robinson. And we talked about him a lot on all the football shows. And obviously, any USC fan knows Deuce Robinson's name. He is still playing baseball, didn't get drafted, but this is a guy that's been compared to Aaron Judge before by the Texas Rangers hitting coach, who, of course, just won the World Series. So there's a lot to be excited for about what Deuce Robinson could potentially be on the baseball field. Now, I'm excited to get a chance to ask Andy Stankiewicz about his development and just how much he's been able to do since the football season ended when he got his hands on him. But if you're just taking into account the type of athlete that Deuce Robinson is and what we've already seen from him on the football field, if he can live up to the baseball expectations that people had from him coming out of high school, that would be a big piece for USC as well. But I'm just excited to see him touch the field and, you know, how many times he's going to play.
Yeah, it should be interesting because he's a guy that they don't have to rely on. It's not like they immediately have to slot him in and say, we need you to perform. So he can come along slowly if need be. And, you know, so if he's a little bit behind the curve because he didn't get as much time in the fall, that type of thing, and he doesn't heat up until midseason or something and suddenly it starts clicking and then you can throw him in and get some at-bats, then, you know, that could be something that's like an extra piece you're adding throughout the season. We'll see. I got to say, as a former pitcher, I'm, of course, going to go to the pitching side. I'm looking forward to Xavier Martinez, the CSUN transfer. They could use him in the rotation. He's pitched pretty much the entire time in his career as a reliever at CSUN, so they could use him there. They wanted to stretch him out and you potentially have him as a starter. We'll see if he gets in the weekend rotation or if that's on Tuesdays. But you know, he's been up to 93 plus slider, good changeup to complement it. You know, I'm excited to see what he can do. And then another guy who, again, might be a little bit further down the road, but I mentioned murder, is Brock Blatter, the kid from Alabama. I remember seeing him in high school at the area code games and big body frame, 6'5", 6'6", somewhere in there. And, you know, it's a downhill fastball that can get up to the mid-90s. So we'll see, you know, as he progresses becoming a pitcher. And that was the thing I was told about him, both from the Alabama side and from what USC was looking at him, is he's still raw. He's a guy that played multiple sports in high school. So, you know, and not playing the best competition up in Montana or Idaho. I can't remember.
Montana.
So, you know, he has an opportunity to continue to get better and better as he learns how to pitch a little bit more. So I'm excited to see the pitching side of it as well.
Yeah, and you trust Seth Etherton to turn him from a thrower into a pitcher. And now the question is going to be, can he do that in one off season and have him ready for the start of this year? Or is it, you know, maybe he heats up in the middle of the year and we get him a couple more opportunities and then we see what he is next year. But you had a lot of pitchers that were A, on USC's roster, but also B, not on USC's roster, that Seth Etherton really turned around last year. You have to give him a lot of credit. I believe USC led the Pac-12 in team ERA, so he was able to put together a big pitching performance. So yeah, those two guys, I think, will play a big role. It worked out with a transfer from CSUN last year with Soderston. You hope the same thing can happen with Martinez. And, you know, by the end of it, Eric Hammond was a guy that had the plus-plus stuff and was coming off of an injury and needed some refinement by Seth Etherton, and he ended up having a pretty good season. So there's parallels here, and I think you trust the coaching staff to get their hands on these guys, and you're hoping it, you know, one of them sticks or two of them potentially even more.
Yeah, and we talk about the, you know, them leading the conference in ERA. That's an impressive stat, especially first year with a new program. But also, one of the dangers that they had was they had to rely on guys a little bit more than they wanted to. because they didn't have the depth. Now they have more depth. And that's one of the big question marks is they were able to do that last year because they had some guys at the back end, notably Garrett Clark closing out games, Kyle Wisch in front of him, who had outstanding numbers. Those guys are gone now. So who steps into those back end roles? So that's one of the big question marks. But now it seems like there's more options for them to go to. Now we'll see if those options play out. And by the end of the season, if it's similar where there's seven guys you trust versus are there 10 guys you trust? And can it be some of those new guys coming in? But I feel like they have a ton of options. We didn't mention a couple of other guys. JUCO kid Will Watson was drafted in the last round by Seattle, did not sign with them, came to USC, up to 96 when I saw him in the fall. Jared Ficus, the Santa Clara transfer, who's a sidewinder. I love me a good sidewinder as a former sidearmer myself. So I'm excited to see what he can do. He's a guy that could be a starter, could be a reliever. They have a couple different guys that have that versatility to give them a little bit more options. But then you talk about Josh Blum. You talk about Hammond could be a guy that could, you know, if his stuff plays up, maybe he's a back-end guy for you.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking this offseason too.
Fisher Johnson, you know, that pitched with you guys up there in San Luis Obispo. You know, Caden Connolly from the left-handed side. Austin Channing, we've heard he's been up to, I was told he's up to 97. I think you heard even more than that. So, you know, there's some exciting pieces. Now, who performs? And that'll be something they figure out those first 3 weeks when they're on the road at different places and playing against different competition before they start Pac-12 play. But do they have 10 guys versus seven guys, you know, that they really trust this season? That'll be the thing. And if you can get more than that, that's even better.
Yeah, and I think that the important part too is like you can have seven guys that you trust to throw between the sixth and the eighth inning. Who are you going to trust to get the outs in the ninth inning when it's a one-run game and there's a runner in scoring position? You won so many games last year because of Kyle Wisch's ability and Garrett Clark's ability to close out those games, sometimes going more than one inning, sometimes pitching all three games in a series. I think right now you would feel confident with, you know, Connolly or Blum or Johnson or any of these guys pitching the seventh or the eighth. Who's the guy that steps up and separates themselves and you're confident that they can pitch the ninth inning? And if that doesn't happen, then, you know, it's in games like that, especially close games, which USC played a lot of last year, you've got to have someone that you can trust in the back end of that bullpen. I would say if you're looking at this team and the biggest spot that they lost from and the biggest question mark coming into the season outside of the off the field stuff that's going on with the stadium, what's going to happen at the back end of the bullpen? Like, who is going to replace Clark and Wisch? Because USC probably over-relied on those two last year. They were great, but they kind of ran them into the ground by the end of the season. They asked them to do a lot. Who is going to fill those two roles, I think, is the biggest question mark heading into the on-field season for USC.
Keep an eye on Josh Blum. I was told he's lost 25 pounds, in great shape right now, and that's made his stuff play up even more. So we'll see if he's a guy that is ready to take that next step. So that'll be something to be fun. We're going to talk a little bit more about all these topics we've mentioned a little bit because we're going to have Andy Stankiewicz, the head coach, join us after our break. So make sure to stay tuned.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors and also please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them into podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you put the Dado Download, the Baseball Pod, and the headline to make sure it gets directed to us. We now welcome in our guest for this week's episode, USC head coach Andy Stankiewicz. Andy, thanks for taking the time to join us. So excited to have you back on the show again this season.
Shaga, my pleasure. Jack, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, looking back on last year, we touched on last year. We looked a little bit forward. We're going to try to get Coach Etherton and Coach Jewett on in the couple weeks leading up to the season as well. But we want to start with last year. Looking back on last year, what was the biggest accomplishment that you guys were able to make as a coaching staff, as a team, and how do you build on that going forward?
Yeah, I think probably I think the biggest challenge, or one of them, is when you're in completely new coaching staff. And this is, remember, I've never coached with any of these guys as well. So there was a challenge there in learning each other and kind of learning each other's personalities. And me as a head coach, giving them space and freedom to do what they came here to do. And so I think that I was able to understand them better and how they work and what's going to help them be in a space to where they feel like they can effectively coach our guys. And so I think that was a challenge for me. And I feel great men, good, great relationships. So I really feel like we did that well. I think that the other challenge, I think that it was big. It was just getting buy-in. You got a completely new staff and buy-in from the players, and that, they trust us, right? There's a trust component whenever a new staff comes in. And I think that the guys were willing to kind of like say, okay, coach, to all of us, we trust you. We believe in how you teach, and we believe in the ability to really care about us as people. And so here, we'll let you, we'll listen. And so I think that was probably the one of the things I think that we were able to accomplish. The guys were willing to kind of just buy into what we were bringing.
Well, when you guys all came in last year, one of the things you tried to address first in the offseason was building the foundation and regaining respect for the program, bringing in veteran leaders, of course, other people in the transfer portal, and then getting that buy-in. What was the biggest thing that you guys tried to address this offseason now that you've built that foundation?
I just we got to keep it moving. It was a solid year last year, year one. And I think the message has been this is USC, and we've got to keep, this train's got to keep moving hard and fast. And we can't get complacent, right, in any of this. And I think that's been the message that they've been hearing, is it's time to go to the next level, right? It's just what we did last, it was a good year, but remember, we didn't get in a regional. I mean, so that's not a good thing. That's a bad thing at the end of the day. And so just having them understand that we still got a ways to go, man. We got a long ways to go. But I thought we were off to a good start.
You got a ways to go as well for practice and for games, because you guys do not have Dado Field. The usage of it this season is being reconstructed or being, new construction there, which should be awesome for you going forward. I'm sure that's a great recruiting tool for you right now. But for this season, big challenges of being on the road for every game. How do you kind of address that with the team? How do you attack that? What was kind of the message to the team when you let them know that, hey, you're going to be playing most of your games down in Irvine, good hour drive away on a good day in LA, or during the midweek, we're going to go over to LMU across the 405 to the west side. So, and practice, you're going to have to get up at 6 a.m. because we're going to be borrowing somebody else's field. What was the message to the team and what's been the biggest challenges so far?
Well, the message was very simple. It's like, this is what we have. And you know, we talk about in coaches, talk about control you can control. And even as coaches, we can't control that, right? It's a great thing, like you said, at the end of the day, when this is, when the new data is complete, it's going to be gorgeous. But in the meantime, you know, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to whine about it? Are we going to cry about it? Are we going to make excuses? Just told them we're not going to do that, right? There's no, I don't want to hear coaching staff or players in one for any moment to cry about being on the bus. And I said, if you don't want to be on a bus a lot, then leave. Then just leave now. And so it's okay. If you're not comfortable with this, then leave. And because this is what it's going to be for the next 2 years. And so I just kind of just made it really, really simple for them that this is the way it's going to be. And there's going to be some challenges, but we're not going to let that be excuses for whatever happens, transpires during the season. I really think that at the end of the day, if myself and our coaching staff can do this in a way that it could kind of unite us, kind of bring us closer together, right? And so that's my challenge, is trying to figure out a way to make this work in a way that the guys actually start to enjoy it. Now, it's easy now because we're not, there's no bullets flying back at us. But you know, when you're in a 3 or 4 game skid and people are mad at each other and frustrated with another, and then you got to get on a bus again, and you got all those, it's just, there's more challenges will come, but they've been fine so far. But I know that the real challenges will come when in the middle of the season, when they're frustrated with one another and they're frustrated with me, and we got to get back on a bus again, and we're sitting in traffic, and they got, you know, all the stuff that we're going to deal with. But we won't let it be an excuse. I can tell you that, Shotgun.
Logistically, without the field so far, what has the process been like for you guys when it comes to practices and scrimmages and everything like that?
Well, El Camino College, Coach Palmer over there has been outstanding. They got a turf field too, which is great. So we can basically, it's just open the gate and roll the balls out and practice and get out, and then they come on the field and they start their practice, right? And so it's been a great setup. It's only 10 miles or so away, so it's not that bad of a drive in the morning. And we're fortunate too that they've kept the batting cages at Dado for us, and we have an outfield, left field to center field grass area that we've constructed two little diamonds on, chalked out two fields, you know. And so now we've got our little fields in the outfield, and we've got the batting cages, we have to sell the bullpens there. So you know, I'll have to find out moments where we just stay at Dado, right? We just walk over to the old field and get our work done there in the cages. And then when we need a team practice, then obviously getting on a bus to El Camino. And so it's early wake up. Our guys are taking afternoon courses so that we can have the morning block for weights and for practice. And so it's a little bit different, but different, as you guys know, doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. It's just different. So we'll figure it out.
Yeah. I was wondering, you know, how do you kind of turn the kind of road warrior season that you have? How do you turn it into a positive? I mentioned to Jack, those bus trips are some of the things that you remember 20 years from now, more so than every game's results. Is there something that you guys try to dive in or push even a little bit more about the mentality and, you know, the actions that you have to make just to be able to go to practice and go to games?
Yeah. We've little video clips, right? The buses are so nice now. You can put little video clips of motivational, you know, you see all these things you get on YouTube, right? So now I'm becoming a YouTube guru. I'm on YouTube trying to find, oh, that's a good one. Put that one on the bus. And so so you just find creative ways and to try to make it light and and kind of, you know, just easy for them. And, but when you get on a bus at 6 o'clock in the morning, there's not a whole lot of talk going on. They're trying to wake up. But yeah, I think that's part of it, is just getting them to, hey man, let's just make this. And the university has been great. Like when we go to Irvine on a weekend, we're going to stay down there. We're not going to bus back. We have a weekend, non-conference weekend or a conference weekend down at Great Park. We're going to check in a hotel on Thursday evening. And that's not done all the time, shotgun like that. Right. I mean, we got an administration, an athletic administration, an athletic director that's like, hey, let's make this right. Let's make this as good a situation as we can for the baseball program. And so I certainly am appreciative that they're going to do their very best to put us in an environment where guys are ready to compete and have success. And so, yeah, we'll turn around and try to have some fun. You know, you have bus Oki, you know, your guys are always bring the guys up and they have to sing a song and just have some fun with it. So we'll be creative and figure out ways to have some good times on the bus.
Well, they've got you on YouTube. Before long, they might have you scrolling TikTok all the time. We'll see. Well, what do you think?
I don't know. Maybe.
What do you think this year's team's biggest strengths are?
I think we pitch. I think we got some depth on the mound, which is a really good thing. We got some returners. You know, you look at Aoki, Hammond, Strongborg, right? Three guys that have pitched a lot. Channing Austin's coming off injury, but he's back. He's healthy. We got this young man, Ficus from Santa Clara, that I think is going to be a big part of our pitching staff, just because he's pitched a lot and he's pitched a lot of good games and he's had a lot of success over there at Santa Clara, which has got a great program. Of course, Filter's doing a great job. And so, I think that there's some, we got Xavier Martinez from Northridge that has pitched a lot of innings. We got a young man named Will Watson that was a nice arm from junior college out in NorCal, and he's here. And so there's a lot of good pieces there on the mound. I think there's some good depth there. We got returners and Josh Blum, right? Fisher Johnson. We got some good young. So I like the options that we have on the mound probably as much as anything else. We need our position players to, the guys coming back, the Greslonic, the Jacksons, O'Verns, Hedges. We got some nice young players that are here that are pushing them, which is a great thing. I mean, we need those guys to, they had nice years last year, but they need to have better years this year. We can't just sit on last year. If they're better, then I think we're going to be fine. If they go backwards and when you're forced to throw freshmen out there that maybe aren't ready, then that could slow us down a little bit offensively.
Yeah, is there anything that you have to do different when there are now some expectations? Whereas last year coming in, there really weren't. There was no one on the team that had sustained success, you know, for very much. So it's kind of whatever you get from them is a positive. And then you kind of work from there. Now with there being more expectations, hey, these certain guys had good years, guys like Austin O'Vern that are going into draft years. How do you deal with it a little bit differently from the approach standpoint on the coaching side when, you know, there are a little bit more different expectations for sure?
Yeah, shotgun, great point. I told the guys not too long ago that last year was kind of a freebie. You know, nobody really, you know, we were picked to come in last in the conference, and we didn't. And now this year we're picked better, which is cool. That's a good thing. We don't get caught up in those predictions, but it's, you know, it's a step in the right direction for sure that we went from last on the prediction to, I think, what, third or fourth, whatever it is. I don't know. So there's certainly stronger expectations in year two. And that's a good thing. I said, I hope that you came here to play at USC because that's the standard. That should be the standard. It should be in a year's time, 1 year's time, we were able to do that. We flipped the switch a little bit, right? To a last place prediction to, you know, kind of at the more towards the top. And that should be why you came here. And again, if you can't handle it, then leave. It's just, I really leave a door wide open for guys to leave anytime they want to. I really do. And so if you're willing to accept that standard and expectation and work and go, and then we'll be fine. But if it's not for you, then if that's too much for you to handle, then you're in the wrong spot. You're in the wrong place. And I'll shake your hand and I wish you the very best. And we all move on. And so I think for us as a staff, it's just like, hey, this is where we're at. This is why we came here. We came here to raise the bar. And that's what we're going to continue to do. And, you know, and now we've got to recruit players that can handle that too. Right? That's up to us, man. Recruiting's big, man. And it's a lifeline. It's what, if you don't recruit well, then I don't care how good a coaching staff we are, we think we are, can be. If we don't have some horses that can do it, then it doesn't matter. And so we've got to recruit well, right? We've got to make sure that we're recruiting the players that are skilled enough. And number two, that are baseball, have a baseball IQ and a desire to get better and to be great and all that. And so, so there's some challenges for everybody, but I'm talking about the staff as well. I certainly understand the expectations here. I came here. I came here because that's what it, I understand what's in front of us.
You guys obviously return a lot of talent, but also newcomers in the form of transfers and freshmen. Who stood out to you so far, and how satisfied with you about the newcomer class that you guys were able to kind of drum up over the offseason?
Mason Edwards on the mound, young kid, local kid from PV, is a left-handed pitcher. He's worked his way into position to, I think, possibly get some starts on a midweek and get some innings on a weekend. Left-handed arm. It's we'll see. I mean, but he certainly put himself in a nice spot. We like, obviously, Will Watson, the nice arm from North Cal, but he's got to throw strikes. He's got to command the ball better. It's been kind of a hit and miss, but it's certainly some arm speed and some arm strength there that's going to play, and probably a bullpen piece, I would think, as we start the season. You know, he came here hoping to be a starter, but he hasn't really shown starter stuff yet. And that doesn't say he won't, but as of right now, but it's a good arm. It's a, and then I talked about Martinez, young, to transfer, like him, got some moxie, some toughness to him. And then Ficus, the kid we got from Santa Clara. It's interesting. The only young man, the only player on our roster that's been in a regional is Ficus, the kid from Santa Clara. And so he's been there. He understands it. He's pitched in some big games. He's pitched in some tournaments. He's pitched in a regional. So I like his experience. Position player wise, we got a couple of young hitters, I think, that are going to be interesting. Kevin Takeuchi from Rancho Bernardo High School down in San Diego, a nice right-handed hitter. And then Avery Covarrubias from Cypress High School. He's a baseball player. He's got IQ. He's baseball. He's a rat. He wants to play baseball. And so I think those two guys have certainly shown, you know, the ability to play as a freshman, like right now, which is great. I told him the other day, I was like, when you get here, I don't want to hear, oh, coach, I'm a freshman. I'm not supposed to play. Yeah, you are. We put you into play. But, you know, you better go. You're a freshman during the fall. There's no more freshmen now. They don't exist anymore. And so, but those two guys have shown a pretty good piece. The kid we got from Connecticut, Chris Brown, big physical young man. He's playing a lot of first base for us. I think he's got a chance to hopefully sit in the middle of the lineup and be a run producer for us. He's had a lot of at-bats at UConn. And UConn, as you know, is a great program. All the respect for that program. And so we feel like, ooh, he's kind of been in it. He's been in some fires before as well. So, we again, it's a lot of moving parts, and every coach would tell you right now, we all feel like we're all going to Omaha because we're having inter squads, right? And you win an inter squad, you win, you can't lose. Now the real bullets start flying, and we'll know better. We'll know what's going on.
You mentioned how, if you've been here in the fall, then you're not really a freshman anymore. Well, that means you still got at least one true freshman in Deuce Robinson. And he's the name that everyone wants to know about just because of being the success on the football field. What's the process been of working him into the mix? And do you consider him, you know, a freshman and he's got to get his feet wet along the way? You know, how far, maybe a little bit behind, is he from some of the other freshmen just because he spent the entire fall over playing football?
Yeah, you know, last year we got O'Vern, right, during mm-hmm. team practice phase. We got O'Vern for 6 weeks in the fall. We saw Deuce for the first time January 7th or 8th, right? So he's a wonderful young man. He's love his energy, great personality. What I've seen, he fits in well with the guys. I mean, they he's right in the middle of all the verbal back and forth that you do on a baseball team. It's all good. But he's got a ways to go. Yeah. Right now he's raw. But the speed tool is interesting. Right. And, but as you know, baseball, man, it's a reps game. It's a lot of reps and it's a lot. And so he's really, we had our first scrimmage last weekend. So he's had 10 at bats. Remember, he didn't play his senior year in high school either. So he's thrown into the fire. You talk about throwing into the fire. I mean, but it's raw, and it's workable, and he wants to get better. But he is behind the guys a little bit, but he started every game in left field last Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And he'll do it again this weekend. So I got to find out. Right. And so, He's in it, and let's go. Let's see if there's something there that we feel like can really kind of turn the corner. But he's working. He's a great young worker. He's great. He's athletic. He's fast. He's strong. But it's just raw. I'm glad he's here. I'm happy to be. He's on our team. We're happy that we're able to work with him. He's a little bit behind the others. He's gonna have to really move here. Shotgun Jack in the next month or so, right? And to see that he should be on the field on a regular basis. And it's not to say that he can't, because this is a heck of an athlete, right? So yeah, but time will tell.
I think fans that are watching from the fringes, they know the names O'Vern and, you know, Deuce and Caden Aoki. They watch a game here, like, you know, here and then. Who are some of the guys that maybe didn't play a lot last season or did that you think could have more success than they did last year, maybe a breakout season? Who are some of those guys that fans should know?
Well, I think Eric Hammond pitched a lot for us last year, but he's a different guy this year. He's a different guy. He was coming off Tommy John last year, and so he's just kind of trying to work his way through it a little bit. But I've probably been as encouraged by him as much as anybody. Just because I just feel like it's like, wow, it's a different guy, man. And the way he runs, the way his PFP, you know, just more command of his pitches, right? And I think he's been somebody that I think people go, oh, this is a different guy. And Channing Austin, obviously, is a big arm. And we're hoping we can kind of use him at the back end. He was hurt last year. He was coming off Tommy John as well. And so I think Channing's got a chance to kind of be a lightning rod for us at the back end. And so I think it sure would be kind of cool because he works his tail off. He's a wonderful student, wonderful human being. And so I certainly want to see him have success for himself, but obviously for us as well. I think Wellesley's a guy, you know, I think Carson Wells is a guy that, man, we need. He did fine. He got a lot of pass last year. But he needs to be better. Plus nice outfield. But we need him to be a little bit more of a run producer and just kind of just be a better baseball player. And if he does, you know, that's going to help us become a better team as well. And so I think those are, you know, some of the guys I think of that were on the team last year and actually played a lot. But I think that my hope that you're going to see just a more refined player in year two.
Andy, thanks so much for all the time. I really appreciate it. One last one quickly. What's the areas that you still need to learn about with this group that maybe you hope to find out either in the next couple of weeks before the season starts or in the, you know, those first couple of weeks before conference play starts? What do you still need to learn? Because you do return a lot of players, On both sides, and you're deeper in the on the pitching side, deeper, you have more options on both sides. But what do you want to learn in the next couple of weeks here?
Well, good. I want we have to figure out who needs to play where, right? We do have some options, and so I think the challenge right now is okay. Hedges, right? He played a great first base. He's playing third base now. Does he stay at third or move back to first? Brown, a big boy from Connecticut. If we bring Hedges back, do we put Brown in left field? Okay, can he do it? Right? How do I get this Kevin Takeuchi on the field? Because I think he can hit now, right? I think, do I try to push him out to the outfield? So there's it's a good question because right now we're running out of time, right? And I think every coach will tell you that the starting lineup opening day is never the starting lineup at the end. We know that. I feel like we'll have time in the middle of it to figure it out. But at the same time, it's nice to know going in that you feel pretty good about where the guys are playing. All right. I don't want to play anybody out of place that's going to hurt us defensively. I think, I'm kind of a defensive oriented guy to start out with. And so I don't want to put our team in jeopardy because I put somebody in the outfield or put somebody in a position to where he can't make a play and it costs us a game. I don't want to do that, but I want to try to figure out a way to get as our best nine offensive players out there. And so I think that's what our staff has been doing in our meetings here lately is like, hey, we're our best nine, best 10. Okay. If these are the guys, how do we put them on the field that we're still going to be a really solid defensive team? I don't want to play somebody out of place. And so I think that's what we're trying to figure out in the next basically 2 weeks is try who can play where and play it well enough. They're not going to hurt us, but give us the best opportunity to produce more offense.
That sounds like a jigsaw puzzle.
It is. It never ends. Never, believe me, lineup. It's always interesting. You're just trying to tinker and figure out who's going to give you the best shot in any given day. So,
and then hopefully you don't have to deal with it. But then when there's an injury, then you got to move guys around a little bit more. So hopefully everyone stays healthy though for you. You got a ton of options, like we said. We're looking forward to seeing how the season progresses, even though we won't be seeing you at Dado for the Dado Down Low. We'll be seeing you at a couple different parks around the way. Andy, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate having you on.
Always, guys. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to Andy Stankiewicz for joining us and to everyone for taking the time to listen. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave us a review on your podcast listening platform. We hope you can join us for the next episode of the Dado Download Podcast.